Okay, folks, welcome to the latest episode, the latest chapter, the latest significant development here on Planet Porky with myself, the Porkmeister, and, of course, the rock chick writer extraordinaire, Ms. Leslie Ann Jones. Ms. Jones, how are you this fine day?
Yeah, holding it together, Michael. How are you doing?
Yeah, very good indeed, thank you. And, you know, before we get going, by the way, I've got to say a really big thanks to everybody who's, you know, continually in touch with us about what we're doing here on the planet. And in particular, a couple of weeks ago, we did the one about protecting women and all that. And that's had a real strong pickup. I was invited onto a TV show to talk about it and all that kind of stuff. So I'm you know, well pleased that people are getting something out of it, if you see what I mean.
So have you progressed the idea in terms of practicalities, how you would make it work, what kind of database you would need, how people would sign up, for example?
No, I haven't not got that far, but I've generally hope that I've, you know, awakened a feeling inside all men that there's a lot more we can do to help women in society since the, you know, the terrible killing of Everard? I'm sorry, I keep forgetting the name.
Yes, Sarah Everard, yes.
That's right. And you know, you see everywhere now much greater awareness, and that can only be a good thing.
Yeah, I agree. I still feel a lot of people are blinkered as to how we feel as women. I was talking to a removal company yesterday because I'm about to move house.
Oh, right.
And there's a little bit of juggling needs to go on because on the day or the days in question, there's only me. And I'm required to be in two places at once. And they've said, well, why don't you give the keys to our guys and they can be getting on with unloading? And I said, no. Why not? Because they could make copies of the keys. They could let themselves into my new place when I'm not there, that kind of thing. Oh, all of our employees are CRB checked. I said, I'm sure they are. But the fact is, Sarah Everard was killed by us. Well, we assume. We don't know yet, but allegedly she was killed by a serving police officer.
Well, that's the charge.
The charge. And the guy said, well, you have a point. You know, we cannot be too careful as women. We can't take our eye off the ball. And no matter what measures they bring in, frankly, we will always be the weaker sex physically. We will always be preyed on by men.
Yes.
Somebody tried to pick an argument with me on Twitter about this, and it stemmed from when you and I were talking about strip clubs and lap dancing clubs.
Right.
And I suggested that those kinds of establishments fuel the fire.
Yes.
And this chap was going, well, you might as well say ban wine because, you know, some people are alcoholics. It's the same thing. But and why shouldn't we have our entertainment? My answer to that is, why should men have entertainment at the expense of women? Why should we be objectified any longer? Because that is all leading to this kind of murder.
No, I totally agree. And it is an argument that will go on and on. And on. Now, talking about doing a bit of telly, by the way, I've had some complaints that television appearance I made because my hair is now completely out of control. People say I look like the guy from Back to the Future, you know, the mad scientist with silver hair. And people are telling me to get it sorted before I next appear on the box. But how on earth am I going to get it sorted, Miss Jones? I can't cut my own hair.
Well, that's a bit harsh, isn't it? I mean, we're all in the same boat. I'm doing television today and my hair looks dreadful. What am I going to do about it? If you wear a hat, they'll ask you to take it off.
Yep.
Nobody has been to the hairdresser for months now, or they shouldn't have done.
Yep.
Some people are having sneaky cuts in the back garden and that kind of thing. But look, we all look terrible right now. So there are some news readers with dark roots in their blonde hair coming almost down to their ears, you know.
Yeah.
I think anybody who looks well-groomed at the moment, we need to ask why.
Yeah, no, well, maybe. I think the law's very sort of iffy on this because my sister got a hairdresser around to do her hair and her husband's hair in their utility room at their home, right? And a policeman turned up. You won't believe it. And a police car pulled into their driveway and the hairdresser fled out the back door and ran off down the golf course that runs along the back of their house because she thought the police were coming for her because he'd gone into the house to cut hair. In fact, the police were calling for a totally different reason. It was to do with a property that my my sister and brother-in-law own, and there'd been a break-in or something like that. And they'd come round to alert them as the landlords. But, I mean, the poor hairdresser woman was petrified. She thought she was going to be prosecuted for cutting
hair. Yes, well, no, sorry, she was breaking the law, as was your sister and her husband, I'm afraid to say, because having hairdressers into your home during lockdown, which we are in, is against the law. So the hairdresser should be prosecuted, and I'm afraid to say, so should your sister.
Oh, well, that's very harsh, isn't it? Thank you very much
indeed. I'm sorry, but that is the law, you know, that is the law.
They both had injections and they both had masks on. And
It's not the point. It's still the law.
Very harsh with me this morning, Miss Jones. I thought that now that the two people on a bench rule had been relaxed, two people can actually be in the same area together.
Yeah, but not inside someone's house.
Well, you know, it's a big house, so, believe me.
It's not the point, Michael. Don't split hairs.
Oh, right. All right. Don't split hairs.
The law is the law. And if somebody is inviting a hairdresser into their home to cut their hair, they are breaking the law. Sorry, I'm not the one making the laws, so I'm just upholding them.
I believe you. Now, who is this? I'm going to live forever. I'm going to learn how to fly. Who's that?
Oh, that's Irene Cara from
Fame. Irene Cara, who is 62 this week, okay.
How'd she really be? Goodness me.
Yeah, yeah. And because we all remember, don't we, as a teenager singing in that, what was the film called?
Fame,
that's right. Yeah, that's right. So she sung that song to Fame, right? She starred in the film. Danny DeVito was in it, wasn't he? He was the guy, the yellow cab driver. But what I didn't realise, reading a bit of a biography on Irene Cara, she also wrote and sang the song Flashdance, right? What a feeling, da-da, feeling like a flash dance. You know, you remember that one, yeah?
Yeah, make it up as you go along. That's the usual style, yeah. Well, you're not so hot on lyrics, are you, really?
Well, it doesn't matter. I make them fit to the music. But did you ever see...
scanning.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Did you ever see Flashdance?
Yeah, about 100 years ago. I can't remember it.
Well, it's about a woman who wanted to be, you know, like a world-beating sort of dancer at some dance school she was at. But to fund her way through the dance school, she was a welder. It was a completely improbable plot. And, of course, she's incredibly good-looking. You know, she looks like a beauty queen. She's a welder. And then she, you know, she and the boss of the welding company, you know, have a big affair because he's building like a block of flats and all that. But what I didn't realise was Irene Cara won an Oscar for composing and singing that song as the best film score. What a talented woman she must be.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. But tell me, why is that far-fetched that a woman would be a welder?
Because she's incredibly good-looking, right? And she puts on the welding outfit. So they deliberately give her one of the most cumbersome and worst sort of outfits any worker can work in, just to contrast that with her beautiful face, you know, showing through the mask of the welding helmet and all that kind of stuff. And and it's just completely improbable. I've never come across in real life a female welder. Have you?
Well, let me tell you this. My nephew Nicholas Marks, his beautiful girlfriend Marnie, is a panel beater.
Oh, really?
Yes, she is. She's absolutely stunning. Yeah. And she'll walk in a gorgeous outfit, high heels, makeup, hair all done beautifully. But her day job is being a panel beater. And she's really good at it, apparently.
Golly. And panel beater, for the benefit of our millions of listeners, is somebody who goes underneath a car that's been jacked up and beats out the panels that have been crushed in an accident. Is that right?
Absolutely right, yes. And she works on classic cars as well, not just any old kind of jalopy on the side of the road. Yes. But she works on Aston Martins and things like that.
Wow, that's fantastic. Talking about Oscars, by the way, have you done an Oscars ceremony? You know,
I did it once. I'm never going to do it again. What a nightmare that was.
Why?
Because, well, you have to turn up at the venue, whichever one in Hollywood it is.
Yeah.
And I'm going back about 20 years, I suppose, when I last did an Oscars. You've got to get there dressed in your evening finery at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon in the sweltering heat. You then have to sit in the auditorium for 5 hours without moving. You cannot go to the toilet. You can't go anywhere because they stop, start, stop, start. It's not a continuous piece of filming, if you know what I mean. So they bring on, you know, the various A-listers, they run them through their lines, and then they do a take, and nobody in the auditorium can leave the building for any reason. So you just sit there squirming throughout. So people like Elton John, whenever he's at the Oscars, he refuses to take part in the whole circus. Yep. He has a trailer out back where he can just kind of run his life from, watch the things on television monitors. And then when he's required, he sort of trots down his little set of steps and up the gangplank, and in he comes and does his thing. Yeah. But you really, it's everyone who thinks, what a glamorous occasion, yeah, what a great privilege to be at that. I covered it once. I was never going to do it again.
Right. Are you allowed to drink from mid-afternoon until it all starts?
No, nothing at all.
Well, really? You just have to sit there and stare at each other.
Really? Well, you stare at the stage, yeah, and applaud and all that. But I wonder how that would proceed now, given the pandemic and the situation that we're in. Yeah. You know, they're not going to be able to have a full auditorium anymore.
No, that's right. Talking about that, full auditoriums and all that, there is, you know, the reports are growing that there will be 20,000 people at the FA Cup final, which is absolutely wonderful. Your dad must have done, I reckon, 50 FA Cup finals during his lifetime.
Oh, that's spot on. Actually, exactly 50. Really? He covered it for 50 years, yeah. He never missed one, not even when I was in hospital dying 1 year.
What were you dying of?
Oh, I had peritonitis. My appendix
burst. Oh,
yeah, the last rites were read while he was at the FA Cup final.
God, that's a terrible story. Tell us this story. How did all that happen?
Oh, so I was at school. I was only little. I had a grumbling appendix, and I was a bit of the class joker. You know, I was the one in the back row who was always
class joker. Yeah, Leslie Ann, Miss Jones, the rock chick writer extraordinaire, used to be the class joker.
It's true. And I was always pulling stunts, you know, and teachers didn't like me very much because I was naughty. Right. And I think I was, you know, sort of doubled over in agony, and nobody would take me seriously. They thought I was pulling one of my stunts.
Right.
And by the time I got home, my appendix had burst.
Oh, God.
And unfortunately, it was an Easter weekend. So the next day was Good Friday. It was in the days when we didn't used to break up from school a week before Easter, you know. Easter moves around, doesn't it? It's not the same date every year.
Yes.
So, and it happened to be that the cup final fell on Easter Saturday that year.
Right.
And so I'd had emergency surgery. My dad was not going to miss the FA Cup final. I think he was not a cruel man by any stretch of the imagination. I think he was in denial about the condition I was in.
That's a shocking story. And one can only say that, you know, the Lord hath mercy.
The Lord hath mercy.
The Lord hath mercy on you, Miss Jones. And the world of rock and roll writing is a much better place for it.
Thank you.
But getting back to cup finals, I've done about 30. And that's quite remarkable because I was never even a sports reporter. I mean, I was a broadcaster on Talk Sport for many years, you know. But Talk Sport wasn't just all about sport. It was about banter with me and Alan Brazil and me and Andy Townsend and all that kind of stuff. I never actually reported on a football match in my life, which, of course, your father will have reported on thousands. But I used to love the FA Cup final because what happened was, and it won't happen this year, of course, but I used to love, it used to start on Thursday night and last till Sunday morning, because on Thursday night was the football writers' dinner. Again, an event your father will have gone to for about 50 years. And it was always at the Lancaster Gate Hotel in Lancaster Gate, okay? Lancaster Gate. And it was in a huge room, and all the papers had their own tables, radio stations had their own tables, and it was just a mass get-together of like-minded people, sports reporters, football people, football broadcasters. Magnificent. I very, very rarely got away from that event before 6 a.m. the following morning, and I bet your dad was the same, because we just all hung around in the bars until dawn, you know, and dawn came up. And then, of course, everybody would sort of, you know, wander off to work or wander off home or something like that, because it was always on the Thursday night before the cup final on Saturday. They had it one time on a Friday night before the cup final, but nobody made the cup final because so much drinking was done. So we gave ourselves a day's rest. The dinner was Thursday night, day of rest on Friday, then cup final on Saturday, and then more celebrations after the cup final on Saturday night. And then usually a sort of get together with people on Sunday lunchtime. It was just a wonderful weekend and I loved it. And it was at the old Wembley where I loved it most, which of course has gone now, but just a super event. If your own team was there, and in the mid-80s, my team Everton got there four times out of the 10 years. We only won one of them. We lost the other three, twice to Liverpool. Then it was even better. But it was like Christmas to me. It was better than Christmas. It was just a celebratory weekend and I loved it.
I used to love going to the cup final. I was lucky enough to go three or four times with my mum and dad. My mother always went because it was an occasion. You know, the wives all went. And people dressed up in those days. I remember my mother in hat and gloves and brooches and scarves and all that. And I was taken as a child. I used to love the community singing on the day. I kept all those programs with the lyrics in to the songs that we sang, Abide With Me and all of that. It was just fabulous, so evocative, and I remember it so clearly.
Oh, I do as well. Abide with me, fast for the evening tide. Abide with me. That's as much as I remember of the lyrics.
Not even that.
No, that's right. But when we got round to reporting on the cup final, and I remember this more distinctly in Wales because we had to move to the Millennium Stadium for 6 years while Wembley was being rebuilt, or the old one was being knocked down and the new one was being built. We used to hold the breakfast show in a pub. A pub, a very long pub from start to finish. And I would always close the show, the breakfast show that we did, with my own rendition of Abide With Me. And the whole pub used to sing it. It was brilliant. And like you, I've got some fantastic memories of cup finals, you know, walking up Wembley Way and the Twin Towers and all that. But truly, truly marvellous. Now, Ms. Jones, we opened today's podcast by patting ourselves on the back with our campaigning for great social issues. And another one I've had a lot of feedback from, and I started this in a tweet a couple of weeks ago, is my campaign to get smart motorways scrapped, because I think they're bloody ridiculous, highly dangerous. They do kill people. And the thought of somebody like yourself in a small car suddenly breaking down on a motorway that hasn't got a hard shoulder is horrifying.
Yeah, it is horrifying. And there have been too many deaths now for anyone to think that this was ever a good idea. Whose idea was it in the first place?
Well, it was whoever the transport minister was when it was floated said, we've run out of money. We can't build any more lanes on the M25 or something like that. Because, you know, the volume of traffic increases all the time, despite the fact that people want to, you know, ban cars forever now. The numbers have grown over the last 30 years, but we haven't built roads in proportion to the number of cars. So eventually they run out of road space and thought, oh, I know, we've got a spare lane there. It used to be called the hard shoulder. We'll call it a smart motorway and we'll open it up when nobody needs the hard shoulder. The problem is, when somebody does need the hard shoulder, all they can do is put a red cross in the box above the gantry, which nobody takes any notice of. So it's utterly ridiculous. It was a money-saving scheme to try and stop building roads.
But tell me, what is smart about it? That's the bit I don't understand.
Nothing at all. There's nothing smart about it. It's the most misnomered description of a public facility I've ever heard. They should be called killer motorways, because that's what they are. You know,
So if I break down, I'm not sure I've even driven on a smart motorway, but if I break down, so we're always told, and this is the wise advice, that the driver must shift over as quickly as possible into the passenger seat and exit the car through the passenger door and get over the fence or whatever there is there at the time and get as far away from the car as possible.
But
what if you've got a baby in the back? What if you've got a couple of kids strapped into car seats and the kids are brawling because they're terrified or they're tired or hungry or whatever, and you're a mum on your own with three kids in the car? How are you supposed to achieve all of that?
It's just complete madness. How are you going to stop anyway? If you've got a small car and there's a juggernaut lorry, 40-ton lorry, behind you, it ain't going to let you stop anyway. It's more chance of it running into you. Anyway, look, it got me really mad, and I started a bit of a tweet campaign. I got a lot of support, you know, and people have built on it now, and it's something that's got to be sorted. It's just, in my view, absolutely ridiculous. From cars to planes, Ms. Jones.
Yes.
I saw the Greek tourist minister just a couple of days ago on television, spoke immaculate English and inviting people back to Greece, you know, when they had their vaccine, they're welcome in Greece. When do you think you'll next be getting onto an aeroplane to fly anywhere?
When I'm absolutely sure that everybody has been vaccinated who's getting on that aircraft, and when there is a scheme in place that, and they have talked about this already, an electronic passport, so that the counterfeit brigade with their proposed health passports won't become a thing.
Yeah.
But there is a database showing that everybody has received two vaccinations. I'm not getting on a plane before that.
No, I tend to agree with you there. It's not so much getting on the plane, it's getting off at the other end that worries me. Because, you know, you'll have had this probably more than me. How long have you sometimes queued to get into the United States of America? You know, or how long have you queued to get back into this country? And those queues, those people in airports, they are just like a football ground, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. They're unruly. And that thing at Kennedy used to be a nightmare, didn't it?
Yeah.
Until they introduced certain measures. I mean, it was one of the reasons I kept my married name when I got divorced, because I used to travel quite frequently to the States with my kids. And the fact that if I'd have had a name on my passport, different surname from my children, and they would have had to go and queue in another queue because they had a different, you know, the name beginning with a different letter of the alphabet.
Yeah, sure.
They would have had to be in a different queue, that kind of thing. So, you know, nobody ever thinks these things through, do they?
No.
Families, especially a single mother with three kids, ought to be able to travel together.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with all of that. Do you remember a couple of weeks ago, we each had sort of funny voices, and we said it could be, you said it could be hay fever, and I said, no, it's too early in the year, that one until summer. Well, listen to this. Early signs of spring are especially welcome this year, unless you are one of the millions of hay fever sufferers in the UK, as it means billions of pollen grains released by flowering trees and grasses are poised to bring misery. Fever season has already started. It's anticipated to be one of the highest ever and will last through till October. I mean, goodness gracious me, we're in for a rough time here, Miss Jones.
It sounds as though we are. My elder daughter, who suffers very badly, she's been scratching her eyes out for a few weeks now.
No, really?
Yeah, she's in a terrible state, yeah.
Yeah.
So, it does look as though we are in for it this summer. I don't suffer with it every year. This is a phenomenon.
Yeah.
I seem to get it every 3 or 4 years, so I must be less susceptible than she is.
Yeah, no, you must be. A US study published in February found that the pollen season has lengthened by up to 30 days in the last 30 years. Instead of starting in mid to late March and ending in early September, it started this year in late February and will finish when October is well underway. I mean, yeah, that's almost a whole calendar year now.
Yeah, it is. It's, I don't know what the answer is, really. Well, I mean, it's not as if people are planting more trees, or, you know, we don't live in the countryside. I probably couldn't live in the countryside, given my propensity to suffer from this particular condition. So, you know, it's hay fever. Hay. I don't want to be around hay, do I really? Yeah,
exactly. I never had hay fever when I was younger, but there is something called middle-aged hay feveritis. And I got that in my sort of mid-50s, and I've had it ever since. But I know what
is
you mean.
Is that the actual name of it? Middle-aged hay feveritis?
Yes, well, that's what I call it. But it's the onset of hay fever. Miss Jones, you're amused by small things today. You know.
I'm always amused by small things.
Oh, please, Miss Jones, you know, the double entendre. You know, what are you getting to you? Okay, folks, you're listening to Life on Planet Porky. Thank you very much indeed for tuning in today, listening to me, Mike Parry, and, of course, rock chick writer extraordinaire, Ms. Leslie Ann Jones. Now, Leslie Ann, can you tell us about this filming you're doing today, please? What is it?
Ah, well, it's top secret. No, I can't, is the answer. Yes, but it's for a documentary, a major ITV documentary coming later in the year.
Sounds great. So you're going to be in front of a camera. Another lady who's in front of a camera and seems to be incredibly successful, although I'd never heard of her until she was nominated for all the sort of Oscars and whatever the other awards are at the moment, is a lady called Emerald Fennell.
Yes, she's the Emma Thompson of the modern age, isn't she? Do you remember Emma Thompson did everything? She sang, she danced, she did Shakespeare, she wrote scripts.
Yeah.
she's been so incredibly successful. So yeah. Emerald Fennell is up for 5 Oscars this year. She's 35, and people are going, wow, she's achieved so much at only 35. Yeah. But Emma Thompson was actually doing it at a younger age.
Was she?
This is the girl who wrote Killing Eve, I think.
No, it's not. That was Phoebe somebody, wasn't it? Killing Eve.
Phoebe Waller-Bridge. Yeah, well, in that case, she was in it. She was,
you're right. Yes, she was. She's an actress and a writer as well. Emma Thompson is the biggest enigma in my life because I know exactly what you mean. She is so incredibly talented. She went to Oxford University, I think, Oxford or Cambridge, can't remember which one, and, you know, was part of that, you know, set of people, Hugh Laurie and all those sort of people and Stephen Fry and all that, who came out, you know, really bright people who went into acting. And not only did she win Oscars for her acting, you're absolutely right, she won Oscars for writing scripts of films and incredibly talented, and I love watching her in productions, but I cannot stand her ridiculous political stance on everything that happens in this world. You know, like, you know, save the planet, but let's fly first class across the Atlantic all the time.
Well, she's not doing it all the time. The thing is, if you live in Los Angeles and whatever it is you're doing happens to be here in the UK, you've got to get here somehow.
Yeah, well, yeah, I suppose so. But
your carbon footprint flying first class is not going to be higher than if you fly rat class down by the toilets.
No, it's not. But then I don't like them to land here and then go to Oxford Street and sit by a boat that's been put in the middle of the road to stop traffic going up and down Oxford Street and preaching to me about saving the planet. But anyway, look.
So are you saying you'll never get on a transatlantic flight again?
Oh, no, I will. Plenty of times, I hope.
In fact, there you go. So what's the difference between you and Emma Thompson?
I don't protest about people flying, and I don't go around telling people to sail across the Atlantic in a sailing boat rather than flying, like lots of these nutters do. If they want to take us back to the Middle Ages, that's a very good way of doing it. Talking about...
Extreme, aren't you, sometimes?
No. What's extreme about it?
Well, because you take a grain of truth and then you explode it to the nth degree, and suddenly all these people are guilty of all these things, when I'm sure Emma Thompson has never actually said, look, guys, get in a rowing boat to Los Angeles rather than fly. I'm sure she's never said that.
No, she hasn't, but the little girl from Scandinavia has, Ms. Thunberg, is it?
Greta, yes.
She was going to somewhere.
She's only a kid. No, she's only a kid, and she's being used as a puppet.
Well,
she's
I agree with that.
Used as a puppet for all of her teenage years. And it's appalling what they've done to that child. That's a whole other argument. Let's not go there.
No, you're absolutely right. But she did actually sail across the Atlantic to some awards ceremony in America. And the only point I made to everybody then was, look, if you want to take us back to the Middle Ages, this is the way of doing it. I'm afraid there's a price to pay for progress. And part of that price to pay for progress is that we have to have things called engines. And engines, unfortunately, emit fumes and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, as you quite rightly say, that's a completely different story. Talking about Los Angeles, of course, the most famous people ever to come out of California, in my view, are the Beach Boys. And that guy, Mike Love, is 80. Isn't that amazing? I read a little profile.
What, that he's 80? Well, I mean, he's lived long enough.
Well, yeah, I suppose you're right. That he's still sort of, you know, up and running and going at 80 years of age. I think the Beach Boys were, I think I remember the Beach Boys songs even before the Beatles, you know what I mean? When I was about 3 years of age or something, you know. If you should ever leave me, life would go on, girl, believe me. What was that one? God only knows.
Which is terribly bad grammar, isn't it? God only knows. It should actually be God alone knows.
Oh, really?
Or only God knows. But God only knows is not grammatical.
Well, you've told me more than once that most lyrics are not grammatical. They're just
quite a lot of lyrics are. Yeah. But there's another one that really gets on my nerves. You know, and I love the guy, Midgier. He used to be an Ultra Fox.
Yes. He co-organized Band Aid, didn't he? With
was actually Live Aid. Yes, but they wrote the Band Aid song together.
Oh right. Okay.
But he had a massive hit. We all knew it was going to be a number one the first time we heard it. Yes. Called If I Was, and I'm in the back row screaming, If I Were, you know, but it doesn't sound quite the same, does it? But it's not grammatical. Yeah. But anyway, we won't split hairs. You were going to say about
Yeah, Dear Sir, My Love. He said he wrote the lyrics to Good Vibrations in 5 minutes, okay?
Yeah, well, that's not uncommon. So the muse discerns. George Michael, for example, wrote Careless Whisper on the bus in about 2 minutes when he was 16. It came to him when he was en route to doing his DJ gig at a local restaurant in North London.
Really?
And this happens so often. I've interviewed, I wish I had a quid for the number of times I've interviewed musicians and have said, what was the inspiration for so-and-so's song? And they'll go, I've got no idea. It just came into my head. And this is what happens. They can't explain where it comes from. That is the magic of music.
Yeah, I totally agree. The thing is, and you'll know this better than me, that only lasts for about 5 or 6 years. And unless you're John Lennon or Paul McCartney, and then it just disappears, and you disappear.
Or Mike Love of the Beach Boys.
Or Mike Love of the Beach Boys, yeah.
I don't think it really disappears, no. I think George Michael, were he alive today, would still be composing groundbreaking songs. Yes, I do.
He's an exception as well, I would say. But, I mean, for instance, Mick Jagger and Keith Richards haven't written a decent song for about 45 years, have they?
It would seem that way.
Well, but it is that way.
You know, yeah. unless they have, actually. Well, they have written new songs and they have released new albums and so on. But, I think, well, okay, what was the last album I loved of theirs? In 2016, must have been, they did Blue and Lonesome, which was an album of old blues covers, American blues covers.
Yes.
Which is actually a really lovely album. But, of course, none of those songs were theirs.
No, exactly. Exactly.
But I think what it is with a band like the Stones, they are sort of dinosaur rock, aren't they? So if you're a Stones fan, they've been around a long time. You've been around a long time.
Yes.
You go to a Stones concert to relive your youth.
Oh, absolutely.
To have that experience.
Yeah.
So you don't want to hear any new stuff they might have come up with the last week.
No.
You want to hear the songs, the soundtrack of your teenage years.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. And we said that, didn't we, in a recent podcast, that if you go and see Billy Joel, you just want to hear his top songs. Oh, the point I'm making is, I think, as with most professions, you have a burst of creative energy, which then can leave you. You know, if you're a painter, if you're a poet, if you're a songwriter, and you just have to cash in on it whilst it's, you know, while the energy and the inspiration and the genius is in your body, because it soon leaves you. I know about these
but
things.
No, that's forgetting the fact that many songwriters carry on writing songs for other people.
Yeah, well, some do, I agree. I mean, the Bee Gees, for instance, wrote loads of songs for other people, didn't they? But I know
most good songwriters do. They carry on writing and their songs are recorded by other artists. It's just that the general public tends not to know about that.
No, it's totally true. You know, if I live long enough, I still think I will be discovered as a genius at something. The problem is, nobody's discovered it yet. You see what I mean?
But are you working at anything to try and hone that genius?
Well, look, I've had a varied career. I've written, had books published, and I, even though I say it myself, had a pretty successful career in the written press, in broadcasting, in radio, a bit of television. But I've never really been accorded the title genius. And I'm sure I am a genius. I think John Lennon had the same problem when he was 16, because he told Auntie Mimi, didn't he? Don't throw away my scribblings, Aunt Mimi. One of these days you'll realise I'm a genius or something, didn't he?
Well, he was saying that when he was 7 years old and he was doing drawings and little paintings
and poems
and stuff. And she was scooping up all the paper and sticking it in the dustbin.
Yeah.
But he was saying at the age of 7 that to her.
Yeah.
So he knew something about himself when he was very young. And I think that these very tormented genius types tend to know that they're different at a very young age. Did you know that about yourself?
Yes, I did, yeah. I've always thought that, you know. I became the Bucklands Pathelli boxing champion when I was 8, okay, in that age group, obviously. And I bashed this Welsh kid up because it was in Pathelli in North Wales. And I thought then there was something special about me, you know what I mean? Anything I turned my hand to, I thought, I'm going to do this, I can win it. One year we were on holiday in Mallorca, okay, and you went to one of these sort of days out at one of these sort of farms, you know, like a Spanish farm or something. And the end of the day was a competition where anybody who could climb up a greasy pole in the middle of a sort of bullring type thing and ring the bell at the top won a prize for his parents, you know, a bottle of sort of cheap Spanish plonk or something. And loads of kids tried it. Nobody got there, but I made it. I did it. Do you know how I did it? Because I was the only one who took my shirt off, and therefore my skin did not slide down the pole as fast as the kids who kept their shirts on. Do you see what I mean?
I would have thought that the shirt material would have given more resistance to the grease.
No, it didn't, because your skin sort of stuck to it, you see. So I worked that out very early on and very quickly. But as I say, I'm still progressing in life, waiting to be accorded a genius at something. Do you keep, now you keep a rabbit, obviously, Miss Jones. We've talked about that.
No, the rabbits are gone. The rabbits, poor little rabbits, they've gone. They've left us.
What?
Yes, because I'm moving house. So I couldn't take the rabbits with me. They're not my rabbits anyway. They're my younger daughters.
Right.
And the rabbits have now gone to live with my elder daughter in Newington Green.
Where's that?
In North London, next door to Islington.
Oh, I see. Right. Okay. Oh, the Islington set, eh? I see. Yes.
It's the other end of Islington.
Do you know the last three leaders of the Labour Party all came from Islington? No, three of the last four. So that's Tony Blair, Islington, the present incumbent, Keir Starmer, and the guy who lost the election to Boris. Who's that? You know, the old guy.
Jeremy Corbyn.
All from Islington. And so when people, you know, accuse the Labour Party of being a tight little metropolitan bubble, catering only for those in that bubble, it's absolutely true. Because
well, no, it isn't. Come on. Well, do you remember Paul Dacre?
Yes.
Paul Dacre, the
legendary editor of the Daily Mail.
Editor-in-chief. Yes, okay. Yeah. That's one way of describing him. He was my neighbour in Islington when I lived there. And also my opposite neighbours were Lady Eve and Lord Nick.
Oh, right, of course, yeah. That's in Belsize Park, isn't it?
No. This was in Islington.
Oh, in Islington. I thought they lived up the hill towards, Belsize Park. They must have moved.
Well, they may do now, but this is donkeys years ago when we all worked on Fleet Street.
Right, okay.
Eve and Nick and I lived on Barnsbury Street, N1, and they were my opposite neighbours. So I used to torment them by going over with an empty teacup and asking for a cup of sugar and stuff like this.
Yeah,
just to wind them up. No, I definitely did.
Why did you want to wind them up?
It was good sport. They were always fighting. God, they used to sling it all at each other.
Oh, yeah.
And I can remember being in the wine press on Fleet Street.
Yeah.
And Nick would always be in there drinking with all of us. And then the doors would fly open and in would sail Lady Eve like a galleon and grab Nick, grab his briefcase and his coat.
Yeah.
And she'd say, you have a son at home called Oliver waiting for you in case you'd forgotten.
Mm. Now, I've seen her do that as well. I saw her do that. Mind you, Nick, he liked mixing with young girls, didn't he? I don't mean there's anything wrong with that. Nick, you know, was attractive to women. And of course, he's the editor. He was a good-looking young editor, and he liked the company of the young employees, and I don't blame him. So did I. So the poor old rabbits are away now. You've abandoned them and left them to their
own. I talk to them every day.
Sorry?
I do talk to them every day.
What do you mean you talk to them every day?
Over the phone.
Oh, don't be ridiculous. Talk to your rabbits over the phone?
Of course, yes.
While your daughter holds the phone?
Yes.
Well, I mean, you're having me on here, aren't you? You think I'm a complete idiot.
I do talk to the rabbits over the phone. They know my voice. It's very soothing to them, and they like to hear something familiar.
God, I've never heard anything so mad in all my life. Using your marbles there, Miss Jones. Anyway, the reason I got onto your rabbits was because I can't actually believe this happens. I thought it was a wind-up, but it says a whopping 20-stone pig is loving his pork life living indoors because it's too cold outside. Vietnamese pot-bellied cross Francisco sleeps in the spare bedroom and curls up with its owner, Morag Sangster. That's a lady. He first ran in at her sanctuary in Carluke in Scotland when it snowed. Morag, 54, said, having a pig in the house is fun, but not for people who cherish furniture. I mean, have you ever heard of anything so disgusting in all your life?
I have heard this before. So, you know, my friend Mike Batt, the wonderful composer, songwriter, he and his wife, Julianne, were not long ago staying with Ingrid Tarrant, who used to be married to Chris Tarrant years ago.
Yes.
Do you remember?
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, blonde-haired lady, Swedish.
They had to leave Ingrid's house in the end, because Ingrid also kept a pig in the kitchen and Mike and Julianne couldn't stand it anymore. So they moved out because of the pig. But look, we've all got a pig in our household, okay?
What?
We all have a pig in our household.
What do you mean we'll have a pig in a household?
Well, you don't, because you live by yourself. But, you know, everyone who lives with somebody else has a pig in the house.
Oh, I see. That's very philosophical, Miss Jones. Yeah. But there's a picture here of this pig. And, it says it's 20 stone. It looks more like 40 stone to me. It's twice as big as the woman who keeps it. But, I mean, you know, what about the obvious problems about, you know, the habits of a pig? Why do people say, you know, oh, you know, he's as happy as a pig in a mud bath or something, or words are all the worse than that.
Something more graphic, yes.
Something much more graphic than that. That's because pigs roll around in muck. And so if they roll around in muck, why would you, on earth would you want one in your house?
Well, they're not going to roll around in muck in the house, are they? They're going to be clean sort of house pigs, aren't they, really? Anyone who's ever lived with a teenage boy knows what I'm talking about.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, I'll take your word for that. I was a very clean teenage boy, by the way. My mother always used to compliment me on, you know, how tidy my bedroom was and how I always looked after my, you know, my PE kit. And all. Well, she looked after my PE kit, but I always made sure she looked after it for me. I'd never go to school with dirty kit.
You always made sure that she looked after it for
you. Yes, yes. Well, you know what I mean. I mean, I'd bring it home and then stand over it while she boiled it. My mum used to boil my PE.
For goodness sake.
Yeah.
That's an appalling thing to say.
Why? No, she took what? She took great pride in sending me to school with the whitest PE kit, honestly.
Of course, we all felt like that. We all wanted our boys to be well turned out, and our girls, for that matter.
Yeah.
But you don't stand over your mother while she washes your kit.
Oh, I used to, because I wanted to make sure it was boiled for long enough, you know, so it got really white. But anyway, she liked doing it, and she was a great mother, God rest her soul, and she brought me up very well indeed. Do you have the scourge of leaf blowers in your neighbourhood?
Oh, do you know, they wind me up something terrible.
I can't stand them.
What is it with a leaf blower? What are they for? They just blew it all somewhere else.
No, that's
why can't they
right.
have a leaf? What about a leaf sucker that would just clean them all up like a vacuum cleaner? What is this thing with blowing them somewhere?
Yeah.
Because then a wind comes along and blows them all over the place again.
Honestly, A, I have no idea what they're for. B, they're incredibly noisy. But the reason I brought this up is there was a case last week of a bloke who is just a nut, and he's got three leaf blowers, and he leaves them all on at the same time so that in anticipation of the leaves coming off the trees, you see what I mean? So they can be on for like 16 hours a day, and it's driven his neighbours to insanity, and now they've got a court order to get him to stop it as a public nuisance. But I totally agree with you. There's a bloke who comes to a pub I use, right, and he's constantly moaning that he gets his leaf blower out and he blows all the leaves out onto the pavement, right? But then the bloke next door gets his leaf blower out and blows them back towards his property, and they're having a leaf-blowing war. And like you've just said, what are they for? Just let them lie there. Leaves look nice lying on the ground. I don't know why people want to get rid of them anyway.
Well, if you leave them on your lawn and they just all sit there, they will rot your lawn. Your lawn will die. They have to be cleared up off the grass. But also they're terribly dangerous on public pavements because they accumulate, and then old ladies and old gentlemen can slip in them and break a hip or whatever.
No, that's true.
You know,
that's
it's
true.
Always a fall that does an old person in.
Yeah.
So you don't want to slip on a pile of slippery leaves. They do have to be cleaned up for health and safety reasons as well. So, but I don't see the point of blowing them. Why not just suck them up?
Yeah, I mean, can't you get a machine that does the opposite, as you quite rightly said, suck them up into a bag, take it away, dispose of it, you know, through whatever means the council let you dispose of it, and just get on with it. Like, it just drives me mad. It's the noise thing, really, which gets me. But anyway, there we are. Ms. Jones, do you ever use a loofah?
I have been known to in the past. Yeah, I don't use one anymore. They can get quite nasty, can't they? A bit sort of mildew and stinky.
Yeah, I haven't had one for years, but I read a story recently that you can now grow your own loofah. What do you think about that?
Is this an early April Fool?
No.
Don't they grow in the sea? Aren't they sort of sea cucumbers or something?
Yeah,
so how could you grow them from seeds?
Well, it's a bit like, have you ever tried growing your own potatoes in your garden?
No.
Not in the ground, but you get like a box of potatoes and you know, you plant the seeds and and they, you grow your own potatoes. It's like, you know, it's like a self-styled sort of, I don't know, sort of one man allotment type thing, you know what I mean? Or one woman allotment. But no, when I saw this, I thought that's just taking it too far. Why would anybody want to do that? And what was a loofah for anyway?
Exfoliation, darling. So you you kind of wet it and put soap on it and you scrub your skin all over with it and it gets rid of the dead skin cells.
Oh, right, okay. I never knew what it was for.
Your beautiful pink baby soft skin, you see.
No, don't give secrets away, Miss Jones. You know, you'll have women running in my direction.
Staring at your door, yeah. Let's have a bit of Porky's soft pink skin.
Yeah, absolutely right, yeah. No, you're quite right. Listen, one last question for you, Miss Jones. Have you ever been mistaken for Leslie Ann Down?
By name, I have. Obviously, the name is very similar.
Yeah. She's 67, by the way. She's considerably older than you. Yes.
Yes, indeed. But I did used to watch her when I was a child in Upstairs, Downstairs on television.
Yes.
And she was absolutely beautiful. Mm. I used to crave growing up to look like her.
Yes. Yeah, very attractive lady. But she's also spelled her name differently to you because she's got an E on the end of her Anne, and you haven't, have you?
No. Leslie Ann Down. Do you remember the other tragic Leslie Ann? Was Leslie Ann Downey, who was murdered in the 60s. And Leslie Ann Down has talked in interviews about this, about how she felt so connected to that murder because she had an almost identical name to that little girl who was murdered.
Ah, little girl, Leslie Ann Downey. Wasn't she a victim of the Moors killers?
Ian Brady and Myra Hindley.
Yes, she was. Golly. Do you know what? That crime haunted me all my life because it happened so near to where I was brought up, you know. And it was just so horrific, the idea of children being taken from the streets and disappearing. Just funny you should raise that because I was only thinking the other day, I read another piece about a renewed attempt to find the body of the last missing victim, John Bennett, I think it is, a little boy called John Bennett with, you know, sort of National Health Service glasses. His mother campaigned all her life until she died about 5 years ago, you know, to restart the hunt for his body on Saddleworth Moor. And now there's a claim to do it again. All I would say is don't do it. You will never find that little boy. It's impossible. It's like looking for not just a needle in a haystack. It's like looking for a needle in the Himalayas, honest to God. And it's a pointless search, which only raises the remaining relatives' hopes. You'll never find him. If you understand what I mean, a moor is a moving sort of object all the time. The ground shifts all the time. Do you know what I mean? And settles and separates and all that. And because even when Myra Hindley and Brady were alive, even they couldn't remember where they buried some of the bodies because it's a moor, you know what I mean? It has a shifting landscape. So I don't know whether you agree with me, but I really think you've got to abandon that one.
I absolutely do agree with that. If you think about the fact that when some people have their dearest loved ones cremated and they might take them off to a beach or to a bridge or to some piece of land somewhere that meant something to the person in their life, and they scatter the ashes, so the ashes disappear on the breeze and that person is shared with nature.
Yes.
And I think you have to consign that loved one to nature and to say they are part of the moor here. This is their grave. The whole moor is their grave.
I totally agree with you. And that's sometimes, you know, why you see people standing on a beach looking out at sea. And then you find when you talk to them that they lost their son who was a fisherman or something like that. But they're comforted by the fact that he died at sea, the place where he worked and, you know, what nature brought to him and all that kind of stuff. Funny that, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree. But somehow you've got to let that go, haven't you? It must be, I mean, we have no idea what that feels like to have a child snatched and to be murdered. But for sanity's sake, for the sake of your own sanity, I mean, you'd have to let that go.
You would indeed. Right. OK, Miss Jones, thank you very much indeed. Lovely as ever to talk to you. And we will resume with our audience in a few days' time. Until then, I want to say to everybody, stay safe.
Take it easy.
I never had hay fever when I was younger, but there is something called middle-aged hay feveritis, and I got that in my sort of mid-50s, and I've had it ever since. But I know what
is
you mean.
Is that the actual name of it, middle-aged hay feveritis.
Yes, well, that's what I call it. But it's the onset of hay fever. Miss Jones, you're amused by small things today.
You know. I'm always amused by small things.
Oh, please, Miss Jones, you know, the double entendre, you know, what I'll get into you. So the poor old rabbits are away now. You've abandoned them and left them.
I talk to them every day.
Sorry?
I do talk to them every day.
What do you mean you talk to them every day?
Over the phone.
Okay. Talk to your rabbits over the phone?
Of course, yes.
What, so while your daughter holds the phone?
Yes.
Well, I mean, you're having me on here, aren't you? You think I'm a complete idiot.
I do talk to the rabbits over the phone. They know my voice. It's very soothing to them, and they like to hear something familiar.
God, I've never been so mad in all my life. Using your marbles. Using your marbles there, Miss Jones. I'm going to live forever. I'm going to learn how to fly. Who's that?
Oh, that's Irene Cara from
Fame. Irene Cara, who is 62 this week, okay.
Can she really be? Goodness me.
Yeah, yeah. And because we all remember, don't we, as a teenager singing in that, what was the film called?